My name is Daniel Shoptaw, an Arkansas accountant with a love for the Cardinals. I spent a lot of years watching the game before deciding to write about it. Now I express my thoughts and opinions at C70 at the Bat, part of the Cardinal Conclave. His name is Dan Buffa, a former Busch Stadium scoreboard operator with a passion for the game. His writing talents can be found throughout the internet on a variety of topics, including movies and anything St. Louis. You'll find him often bleeding out words at stlouissportsminute.com. Every week, we pool our knowledge and our opinions to create this podcast. Together, we are the best Dans in baseball. Welcome into episode 8 of the Best Dans in Baseball. I'm Daniel Shoptaw, that's Dan Buffa. We are recording this Thursday night, July the 30th. We are just about 5 minutes past watching possibly the wildest game that the Cardinals have played in some time, definitely this year. A 9th inning rally. We see Matt Carpenter hit 2 home runs. We have Greg Garcia doing what Greg Garcia does best and winning the game without hitting the ball, at least with his bat. But all that aside, and we'll talk some more about that. But I wanted to, as some of y'all know, follow me, I've been in St. Louis the last couple of days, which is as much as fun as going to St. Louis is and all this stuff, it probably is the worst time to try to do that, because when you're on vacation, you tend to not be as plugged in on stuff, and that is probably not the good idea to do the week before the trade deadline. So I get this on the traveling home today. I see Cardinals trade for Brandon Moss. And so that's why I wanted to try to hopefully talk to Dan tonight so we could kind of get a grip on this, because, you know, on the face of it, it's not a trade that you would have thought John Mozeliak would make.
No, it's not. And, I wrote 2 columns for it today because I was basically – I was on the opposite side of what Shoptaw was dealing with. My car was in the shop. So I'm over at Starbucks at my laptop, and I'm just like, okay, I'm ready for some trade news because I can just fire away. And I wrote one take on it that was just, and both my articles, which you can find at STL Sportsman and KSDK, I kind of circled the same thing, that this is just a very troubling move. And, you know, and then as the day went on, you kind of start to hear other things and you get everybody's take. And then the whole thing for a writer is to not switch your take just because everybody else is saying, well, it's kind of good. The Brandon Moss deal is just, it's not a Mozeliak move to move a guy like Rob Kaminsky, who is, 20 years old. I mean, this kid is a very young kid. He's a New Jersey kid. He's in high A at Palm Beach. He's pitching very well. He's got a low ERA. He's got, an eye for this rotation. He's the 3rd ranked prospect in the Cardinals farm system, but then, Mo just deals him for a guy who isn't bad. Brandon Moss, he was an all-star last year. He's hit, 2 years ago, he had 30 home runs. He had 25 last year. He's got, when he came to the team this morning, he instantly became the leader in home runs and RBIs. So he's not a big bum, but he also hits 217. He's got over 100 strikeouts. So you ask yourself, how bad, this is what I kind of came to over the day, how crazy was this market that in order to give up Rob Kaminsky, you got Brandon Moss? I can only imagine what the Brewers wanted for Adam Lind, if they even called Baltimore about Chris Davis. I mean, if the price for Brandon Moss was Rob Kaminsky, ladies and gentlemen, I don't want to know what the Brewers asked Mo and the reason that those talks broke down. But, on the surface, it's not a good deal, but I think when Mo told KSDK the night before the game, I think he just said that, we dealt from a position of strength. I think he's got faith in guys like Cooney and Marco Gonzalez and even other guys like, Luke Weaver and Zach Petrick and Alex Reyes, who isn't going anywhere. He pitched for Springfield tonight. I just think that he thought, okay, if this is all I can get, I mean, if I have to deal a Kaminsky to even get Brandon Moss and upgrade our position, then I think he pulled the trigger. And I think as Matt Whitner over at I-70 Baseball said, I think this is a new wave for Mozeliak as far as getting a guy who kind of helps that win-now philosophy. I still don't really feel completely good about it, but, I don't hate it. I just don't like it that much right now.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, like I said, this is kind of me talking it out, trying to get a grip on it.
Yeah.
In some respects, this is a Mo deal.
because it's a guy that is not a free agent at the end of the year. He's got control going forward. He's arbitration eligible, which, again, the Cardinals don't typically go to arbitration, but very good chance that they would sign a contract for him. And I think they're going to have to. I mean, you know, they're going to obviously have him next year one way or another. You don't give up Kaminsky for a guy that you get rid of at the end of the year. I just wonder if Kaminsky was not rated as highly inside the organization as he was out.
Yeah.
You're right. He's not an Alex Reyes. I had kind of heard some ideas, and I don't know where, that he might be a three starter as a ceiling. That may not be true. I don't know where or if we not heard that, we'd have to ask Mr. Nagel about all that. He would have much more of a handle on anything of that nature.
Yes.
And the Cardinals do have pitching. Now, it's not as deep as it used to be. Obviously, we're starting to see a little bit of that hole in the system, because a lot of those guys, like you're talking about, Reyes, Weaver, Flaherty, those guys are down lower in the system. They're a couple of years away.
Yeah, they're all ascending.
Now, to be fair, there's not going to be any obvious spots in St. Louis the next couple of years. So that's not a big deal. But, you know, to lose a guy like that out of your dry powder, as it were. Again, yeah, you're right. You feel like you should be able to bring in more than a Brandon Moss. Now, I know I read some of the quotes from Mo. Felt like he was a much better hitter away from Cleveland, almost all of his home runs have come away from Cleveland, and his average is 240 away from whatever their ballpark is nowadays. I don't remember what the sponsor is. Anyway, so, yeah, I get that, although he's still not that good. I mean, I don't know. Do you think that, you know, a new league, you know, a new attitude, I mean, is that going to help? I mean, the guy's 31, so he's kind of getting to the end of the, you know, big prime window anyway.
Yeah, I mean, and the good thing is that, you know, and I found this out, you know, after my, you know, two articles were already published, okay, he actually hits really good away. You know, I'd say writers everywhere, just look at the splits before you write two columns as far as you want to get to reading the player, because that is a big bright spot, is that he does hit well away from Cleveland. You're right, he's hit 13 of his 15 home runs away from Cleveland when he was playing in the American League. He slugs over 500. His numbers are actually good. He's over 808 OPS on the road. You know, it's one of those things where I think Mo is counting on, well, look, he comes over tonight and he experiences a walk-off win for, you know, for his new team. I think that's just kind of like telling him, I mean, this is where you're at. You know, we expect the win here. I mean, he goes from a team that's a cellar team almost, you know, a team making in the basement of the American League, and he goes to a team that's on top of the whole major league. So for him, it's going to be, yeah, I want to do my best. You know, there's a need for me here. And Mozeliak also claimed to say that this was in the works before the Holiday injury. And I think it just gets kind of, you know, illuminated a little bit now with Holiday at least being out for, you know, another month, maybe month and a half. So Moss, he sees a place to play here. I mean, Mozeliak got a guy who, if he hadn't gotten into town about 3 hours before game, 2 hours before game time, he probably wouldn't have started tonight. I mean, this is a guy that's going to play. Steven Piscotty continues to, you know, collect hits and really play well. But, I mean, Brandon Moss is going to play on the field. I mean, you know, he got in there tonight, you know, got a couple of bats. There were people that are wanting to hit the walk-off. I wanted him to do it just to kind of prove me wrong, because the good thing about being, you know, a Cardinal writer and writing about the team you grew up with is that even if you're skeptical about something and that player proves you wrong, it's still a good day. So even if Brandon Moss turns out to be a great player, he hits another 10 home runs, he drives in a bunch of runs, I mean, being wrong here isn't really bad. It just, we all have that initial reaction to a trade. And I have heard the same things you've heard about Kaminsky. I like the kid a lot, but I've also heard that, hey, you know, I mean, really, I mean, right now he may project as a third or fourth starter, and that's kind of what Tim Cooney is kind of starting to show himself as. That's what Marco Gonzalez could probably show himself as in most rotations across the major leagues. So I think Mo just kind of thought, okay, I have a lot of pitching. At least I have a lot of pitching for the next 3 to 4 years. And the Indians may not even see what Kaminsky has until, you know, next year, maybe the year afterwards. So I just think that Mo saw a chance to make a trade, get a bat. And, you know, the Cardinals had just gotten shit. I mean, we can say that it's been in the works for a little while, but, you know, if you're seeing your team get shut out twice in a row and seeing Holiday go down, Mo had to be thinking, okay, I got to do something. I mean, if I was hesitant before about making this trade, I think it just triggered him to speed it up. And people are trying to say that like the Indians like duped Mo. I'm sorry, but nobody dupes Mo. Mo knows what he's doing. Mo doesn't pull the trigger on anything. I can question him all day about a roster configuration or a move here or the trade he made today. But I know that at the end of the day, there's a Mo quote for you that he uses almost, you know, every other interview. But I mean, I think at the end of the day that Mo knows what he's doing. And I think he is counting on Brandon Moss coming over here, getting into a winning environment with a good team, you know, a good defense most nights, not tonight. You know, just kind of feeling that Cardinal wave of euphoria and the way they play here. And that's the hope. You hope that he comes here and he contributes because he's going to get chances. I mean, he's going to get at bats. He's going to get out there, play first. He's playing left. Holiday is not going to be seen, I don't think, until at least mid-September. I mean, especially if they don't rush him back again or if he's, you know, if he has to run slow to first base and not re-injure himself. So I think the trade is timely. As far as the value, we're just going to have to see how it plays out. We're going to have to see what he can do with 60 games.
Yeah, I think that it is interesting. My feeling is, if their discussion was, yeah, we were talking about this before. Yeah, I bet they were talking about it before.
Yeah.
But I bet they kind of left it at, you know, Kaminsky for Moss. And Mo's like, well, let's, you know, maybe, and he was probably trying to make, maybe work a little bit better deal. And as soon as Holiday goes down, he picks up the phone and said, we'll take it just before you change your mind.
Well, yeah, he was on the phone, I think. I think they caught him on the camera yesterday, texting on his cell phone and on the stadium phone. He was two-fisting at people. He was probably calling two teams and going, huh, what, this, huh? I guarantee he wasn't ordering pizza.
Probably not. I mean, you know, I was there last night and watched and just saw, you know, Holiday go down. Of course, everybody did at home as well, watching the thing, but
it was bad. You
know,
I
was pretty stunned today to find out that they thought he'd be back this year. I figured he was gone.
Yeah, same for me. Just for the fact that he, you know, when he got hurt in Colorado on June 8th, he was able to kind of put weight on it. He was able to walk. He was able to go down the steps before he went into the clubhouse. Last night, he literally didn't even touch first. He hopped and skipped and fell into the dugout. I mean, when you see a Hulk like Matt Holiday crumble to the ground, you know it's got to be some insane kind of pain. This guy takes 98-mile-per-hour fastballs off his elbow and kind of winces when everyone else in the world would probably go down in a heaping pile of tears. So to see Holiday kind of limp up like that, you thought, okay, that had to be a full tear. And so today, when he just goes in the 15-day, it's a grade 2 again, but even they're saying it's not as bad as last time, it just makes you think that, you know, Matt Holiday must have the strongest quad of all time. Or, you know, or maybe he secretly is, as I've said for the past 5 years, that he's just not human. You know, he could be a combination of RoboCop and Hulk. I don't know. But as far as Matt Holiday just being able to resist a grade 3 strain on his quad, it's great news. But once again, I'm not going to think about Matt Holiday coming back until he is kind of taking swings. You know, in his brief time back, he was hitting .214 with that one home run. So, I mean, he wasn't really hitting too great, but, of course, you know, when it comes to, you know, down to these last 60 games, these 2 months, you're going to have to see what you got from him and see what he can contribute, if at all. So I think it's a kind of a save, but it's also one of those things where we just got to, like, not think about him being in a Cardinal uniform because he's obviously going to be out for a while.
You know, if you want to be conspiracy theorist about it, you would say that the Cardinals are announcing that it's not so bad, so that in case Mo wants to make another move, he's got a little bit less, you know, maybe a little more leverage. Now, I can't see where he would make another move, just because we're kind of getting clogged up with a bit about anything that they need anyway.
We've
got lots of outfielders. We got a lot of first basemen. So unless you're going to trade a significant number of those off the major league roster, if you're going to trade a Grichuk and, you know, and somebody else for a outfield bat, which, I mean, could it happen? I guess.
Yeah.
You know, could you see
anything's possible?
You know, get a Justin Upton for something like that.
I mean,
I don't know, but it seems like Mo's probably done, and so hopefully that means that Holiday's injury is way they say it is, it's not so bad, and we'll see him again at the end of the year, which is going to bring its own problems when it comes, and that's what you're going to do with Stephen Piscotty then, because, like I've said, you know, I watched him the last couple of nights, and right now it seems like Piscotty was one of the few that really has some idea what he's doing, some consistency at the plate.
Yeah.
He's not necessarily hitting a whole lot of power, although we did see a double from him tonight. But even just putting up some average, I mean, you look at that lineup, and he's the only guy, and granted, he's got a lot less at-bats, but he's the only guy hitting over 300. You got to get to keep him out there, I think. And so when Holiday comes back, you know, he's not going to play first as much. I mean, he could probably, maybe they'll have some sort of rotating thing. That's down the line. That's getting into probably September, like you said, and you get the call-ups, and you're hopefully, you know, cruising along to the division title, and you can do things like that. But I do think in some regards it's beneficial, because the Cub did not seem to be that excited about playing Stephen Piscotty at first base. He played there like two or three times.
Yeah.
It just seems like they didn't make it as much of an effort as I thought they were going to with the fact that the trade deadline was coming. And so this seems to be like immediately he's going to be right field, and Brandon Moss is going to play first base.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, you know, the Cardinals, like, look, you know, we can't really, you know, you're going to push a kid into a position he hasn't played before. And as our good friend Corey Rudd told me, this is not softball. You can't just go in from the outfield and put your beer down and go play first base. So I kind of understand that viewpoint, and the fact that if he's comfortable out in left field, which is good for the team. I mean, you know, you have people at first base that can't even, you know, if he's any hesitant about scooping a ball, as the Cardinals are kind of known to throw a few, you know, off the bag, maybe in the dirt, you know, you got to be able over there. And one thing Mark Reynolds has been, he's been a pretty good defensive first baseman over there. I mean, yes, his bat hasn't been what it's supposed to be, but he's been pretty good at, you know, grabbing everything he can over at first base. So if Holiday's injury has any kind of silver lining, in a good way, it's going to be that Stephen Piscotty is going to play a lot, and, you know, and he's going to share time with Brandon Moss, even if more, if Piscotty keeps hitting the way he is. I mean, you have to play this kid. I mean, he's come up and he's got 9 hits and 25 at bats. You know, he had the game winning sac fly. I mean, he's doing all kinds of things. He's only got 4 strikeouts, so he's one of the guys on the team that doesn't strike out a lot. So that's got to speak for something. He just takes a good at bat. I mean, I think just watching him, I see a kid who's just almost like he's like every other Cardinal that comes up in the system. It's like he's been here for a couple years. I mean, he just seems to, he doesn't seem to lose his cool out there. He works a deep count. He can hit the ball to all fields. I mean, when he needs a sac fly, like unlike some of our veterans, he can actually, he's kind of a situational hitter where he can get what you need. Like, you know, in that game winning sac fly against Atlanta, you know, he didn't try to do too much. He just pushed the ball off to right and he did what he had to do instead of trying to overswing and try to hit a home run. And I see a lot of that in this kid, and I think it's going to help him just to keep playing him. And it could be starting at first base here and there, you know, in right field to give Hayward a day off, or in left field. I think that people were kind of like, when they got Brandon Moss, they're like, okay, I mean, is this going to shut Stephen Piscotty down? And I don't think it is. I mean, I think that, you know, whoever hits is going to play. And right now, Stephen Piscotty's got one of the steadiest bats in this lineup.
Yeah, I mean, he's just got to play. Let's talk a little bit about some of the weird parts of this trade. And I'm not saying about what's weird about the deal, because it is a little bit strange itself. But let's talk about the fact that this is the third year in a row that the Cardinals have made a deal on July 30th. Third year in a row that trade is with the Indians. I think it's a little weird in one regard, just because, hey, that's, you know, it's kind of strange. Why are we always trading with the Indians? But on the flip side of that, I'm maybe not as surprised as I would be at first glance, because Chris Ananetti, or I believe that's what his name is the general manager in Cleveland. And for those that just know Mo, obviously maybe you don't remember around the time of Walt Jocketty and when he transitioned out of here, because it's getting close to 10 years, 8 years or so now.
Mm-hmm.
But the first person they interviewed for that job, the job, the person they really wanted for the GM job, was Chris Ananetti. And my feeling is, I'm guessing that Cleveland values their players, or has an idea about their players, kind of, that's very similar to what Mo thinks about his players. It's a team that they have similar, maybe similar philosophies in the front office, and it just makes it easy to get a job, a deal done. I think they said this is the 11th deal that these two teams have made since 2002, which granted is predates both of these guys, but I guess there's certain partners you just feel comfortable with. Now, that also lends to the idea of, are you going to the same well too often? You know, it's not like Cleveland is having all this great success. But the trades, and, you know, last year's trade with Cleveland didn't work out at all. The year before it did all right. But,
I mean, Mo could have a, maybe Mo's just got a sick idea about, you know, if I make a trade with Cleveland, you know, Cardinals are going to go deep in the playoffs and do something. Maybe he just sees it as a prerequisite. Maybe, you know, and Eddie is always going to be on his speed dial when he needs a trade. He's going to go, okay, who you got? Do you have some kind of, you know, journeyman bat that I can have? But, you know, when last night, when all this kind of started, it started around midnight last night. It was when Chris Cotello, I think is his name. He's a young kid who writes for the MLB Daily Dish for SB Nation. He's a really, I mean, you know, all day him and Ken Rosenthal are just firing off updates. But he was the one that first reported that the Cardinals and the Indians were talking about a significant trade. And, of course, the Camel X guy, Chris Robb, I don't know if I'm saying his name right, Camel X guy, Even he did a long show where he talked about, you know, Brandon Moss and Carlos Santana, and that's the guy that I was kind of wanting. Because Carlos Santana, he can play first, he's caught, you know, he's been a catcher in his career, he switch hits, you know, he gets on base. So when we talked about Cleveland, I was like, okay, maybe we can get Brandon Moss and Carlos Santana. This is a great trade. And so the whole, you know, throughout the whole night, you know, the 2 to 3 hours of sleep I actually get, I get up in the morning. I'm thinking, okay, so we're, you know, I get back on this horse, and I keep thinking, like, okay, are we getting Santana? I mean, you start dreaming about Michael Brantley, which is just an absurd dream. Mm-hmm. But you know, but Brandon Moss, and then all of a sudden I'm hearing, okay, Brandon Moss for Kaminsky Solo. I'm like, oh no. I mean, you kind of think, okay, there has to be other players. Like the last night with the Cole Hamels trade, it seems like after like 10 minutes they add like three players to that deal. At first, it was like, you know, the Phillies were getting like three guys, and all of a sudden they got like six. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe there's more to this deal. Maybe there's going to be an extra guy coming in. Maybe the Cardinals are getting a bullpen guy. But when it was just straight up, that was what really threw me off about this deal. And, you know, and there's people, I mean, everybody's going to draw a line. You know, there's going to be people that mock the people who don't like the trade. Oh, come on, you know, Mo can't win. It's like, well, Mo can, you know, do his thing, and then all we're going to do is just basically react. As I told somebody one time, I mean, I'm not a reporter, I'm commentary. I mean, it's a pretty easy thing. You just sit back and react to a move, and, you know, if people don't like your opinion, well, then you basically just got to keep right and turn the other way. But it just, you know, and it wasn't a horrible trade. I keep telling people that. I mean, Brandon Moss is not a bum. I mean, this guy, like I said, was an all-star last year. He's got some pop in his bat. It just, for me, I guess the buildup, it was like seeing a great trailer for a movie, and then the movie, it was just kind of like bizarre. I mean, I thought that the deal was going to be bigger. But when you say significant, I think like, you know, 2 to 3, maybe 4 players. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, bigger players. I mean, Brandon Moss is not a bum, and Rob Kaminsky isn't a 25th ranked prospect. I mean, these are significant players. I just thought it was going to be bigger, and that's what you do for kind of starting to believe all the rumors and sources. And, you know, if you get caught up in this trade game, you can really get your heart broken. And so when I was thinking about Carlos Santana and Brandon Moss, apparently Carlos Santana, who, in my opinion, would finally push Tony Cruz off the cliff, that didn't happen, and we got Brandon Moss. And, you know, we can't judge the guy after 2 at-bats. You know, he's going to get an opportunity to play. But I think it's a trade that you can feel both ways about. You can feel okay that Mo was justified in dealing from a position of strength for a thing that he needed and power. You can think about how crazy the market was and what the demands were for other players. But you can also be content in thinking that this trade is just a little bit bizarre.
You know, I was talking to Jeff Goldman, who's our public relations over at Fox Sports Midwest, and I was talking to him yesterday, getting a chance to look at the new studio and stuff. And we talked about, you know, a little bit more in the idea of Matheny and some of his lineups and things of that nature. But he said, you know, and his philosophy is one that's similar to mine, is that you always assume that, and I think you have to give the benefit of the doubt, that the manager and the general manager have information you don't have. There's stuff that they know that you don't that makes this thing look probably more palatable, more reasonable to their point of view. They've got the internal, you know, their internal statistics, their internal projections, their internal ideas that why this guy is going to work here. And maybe it does and maybe it doesn't. I mean, it didn't work with Justin Masterson last year, although Moe indicated he was a little bit more hurt than they had understood him to be when they made the deal. You know, it worked for Mark Szczepanski. You know, we look back, and I don't want to say that, I don't want to look like I'm criticizing Moe, because in Moe we trust is still a valid mantra, I believe. Some of the trades lately have been a little bit shakier, but you look back to 2011 and the trade that really made his reputation, you know, that was Colby Rasmus for spare parts for the most
part.
And if that team doesn't have a miraculous run, you know, even though Colby Rasmus hasn't done much since, I don't know that trade's looked at as positively as we look at it today. I mean, those pieces, well, except for Corey Patterson, who you just had to take on, did have an impact in that run. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, and I'm not saying it shouldn't be considered a good trade. But, you know, if they don't make the playoffs, I wonder if we have a little bit of different opinion of Moe right now in his trading abilities than we do. Again, he knows a lot more about what's going on. You start to wonder, is he going to get into a rut? And then you look at and we'll get to this a little bit more later, but the contract today that they signed with Fox Sports Midwest, where they're going to get $1 billion between 2018 and 2032.
Yes, sir.
That seems to be, I don't know because I can't actually fathom it, but it seems like it's a lot of money. So, you know, how is that going to play in? How does that play in? You start to think maybe you can make trade. You're not going to be the Dodgers who can go out there and buy like five contracts and just ditch the guys as soon as they
do. Yeah, they're basically like the National League version of the Yankees. I mean, and I do get what you're saying, you know, and Moe did kind of address that. I mean, when they were asking him today, he says, look, I mean, we're not going to tell you what we think about players. But, you know, you do have to trust that these guys, I mean, and Moe was pretty even. I mean, he said, look, I know people are going to think we overpaid. But, you know, I mean, but he said they're dealing from a position of depth. And, you know, he isn't going to tell us what he thought of Kaminsky. He isn't going to go, well, you know, I think Kaminsky's just kind of a average pitcher. You know, you're never going to see Moe say that. But that had to be what you have to infer from this kind of deal is that they didn't see Kaminsky like they see, you know, Alex Reyes, obviously. That they see him as an untouchable piece that isn't going to be, you know, that this isn't available even for David Price, for Brandon Moss, for whoever it is. I mean, they had to know something about Kaminsky that kind of turned them off. And this is the same kind of thing where earlier in the season when I wanted Xavier Scruggs to be here, well, maybe people in our organization know that he's just not going to be a good player at this level. And that's why, you know, he never gets an extended chance until late. And it's just part of the things that you're exactly right, that we just don't know about these players. These guys have files and, you know, and a file on each of these players of what they think and what their ceiling is. And those things can shift. I mean, you have a guy in Patrick Wisdom right now who's basically turning heads because he's got, you know, a new power swing that he's kind of mashing this year. Mm-hmm. This Jeremy Hazelbaker hit a grand slam tonight for Memphis. He just keeps on hitting. This guy just kind of popped out of nowhere and is really doing well. So, I mean, you have these guys that may even surprise Mosaic and the Cardinals, but, I mean, they know things about these players that fans are just never going to know. To us, Rob Kaminsky was the third-ranked prospect in the organization. He was 20 years old. He was probably going to be ascending to, you know, the AA Springfield soon. It's just one of those things where you'll never know. And if you sit here and try to think about what if we had kept Rob Kaminsky, you know, he could have really helped us in 2017. That's just going to really, it's going to be painful. And so when I start thinking, you know, on the same day that he makes this bizarre trade, I think, oh man, you know, we got all this money. So what I start thinking, being like, you know, the guy who doesn't even know what $1 billion looks like. It could probably fill a room in my house. But it's one of those things where you start to go, okay, so is this going to help us, you know, sign guys like, you know, Hayward? Because you can kind of backload the deal and, you know, maybe in 2016 and 17, you can kind of go out and get big guys and go, okay, we're going to backload your deal. So really, you know, the extension with Fox Sports Midwest is very exciting because it's the TV money the Cardinals have been waiting to get into. It's the TV money that helped the Angels go crazy and sign Pujols and Josh Hamilton and everybody else, you know, who was outside their stadium that year. It's basically essentially what the Cardinals have been waiting on, this big extension that actually gives them more connection to Fox Sports. One, not just Fox Sports Midwest, as far as streaming baseball on your mobile tablets and your phones. It's a big deal. It was kind of like that salt and pepper today this morning. You had the salt with the crazy trade. You had the pepper with the, you know, the extension and all this money that all of a sudden I just started thinking, okay, so who are we going to sign like next year, the year after? That's going to be like this monstrous bat. Because I do think eventually the Cardinals are going to need a bat. Not Giancarlo Stanton, even though this money kind of helps me think that when 2020 comes around and he finally wants to get out of Miami, maybe the Cardinals bring him in. I don't know. I'm just a Giancarlo Stanton fanatic. And see, I'm going completely off. See, I start thinking of Giancarlo Stanton, people. It's like me thinking about coffee. Everything else just stops mattering. But, yeah, I mean, when it comes to that money deal, I do think about, okay, rough trade, but let's start talking about this money and how it's going to play into the Cardinals signing people and keeping guys like Lance Lynn when his contract goes up, you know, and signing guys like Randall Grichuk if he keeps hitting the way he is, and maybe, you know, backloading a contract like Hayward if you do want to try to keep him here after the season. You know, all those things start playing in my head, and all I think about is that eventually this team is going to need a big bat, and they're going to need a bat that makes a difference. And I don't know who that guy is. I mean, they're going to need a guy like Tulo or Stanton, a guy who's going to kind of come in and anchor the lineup, because Hayward's an all-around great talent, but the Cardinals are eventually going to need that masher. Do you agree?
I think so. I think that's somewhat what Mo is trying to do here. I mean, that's why he went out and got Mark Reynolds this offseason. This is why he's gone and gotten Brandon Moss now, because maybe they don't hit for average, but they have power. And in today's game, power is such a commodity.
It is.
Obviously, I think that's why they went and drafted Nick Plummer first this year. I mean, he's a high school guy, but they think he's got some really significant power. We'll see how he develops.
Yeah, but wasn't it the last couple of years? I mean, for how long have we drafted a pitcher in our first round?
It's been quite a while.
Yeah, I mean, even with our first two rounds, I mean, when they drafted a position player, I was like, okay, they're actually trying to get a bat. I mean, they're trying to rebuild that depth that's basically come up to major leagues. I mean, that's the problem, folks. That, you know, you have Oscar Tavares who came up here, Randall Grichuk, Piscotty. You know, the Cardinals have emptied a lot of their offensive firepower. I mean, when you have a guy like Greg Garcia leading Memphis in batting average before tonight, and, you know, in stolen bases, and and you have a guy like Dan Johnson tied for the team lead in home runs down there. And that's when you can tell that when you got a 35-year-old journeyman first baseman, Dan Johnson, tied for the lead for your team lead in home runs, you know that your AAA team's getting a little weak. And, you know, and yes, the guys like Hazel Baker and even Jacob Wilson, who's got some pop in his bat, those guys are good, but it was really good to see the team draft a guy like Plummer, a guy who could eventually, you know, be a bat in this lineup. And it was good for the team to kind of shift their focus. And like I said, what Matt Whitner wrote about today, I mean, that this is kind of a shift in Mo. In a way, it's kind of the same kind of movie, gets the guy out of control, but it's like you just said, he's getting guys with power. He's going, okay, you know, I have on-base guys in Halladay and Carpenter, and guys didn't get on base. But now the search, and it may be a slow search, people. Sometimes the first two rocks you pick up are not that great. You know, you pick up a guy like Reynolds, okay, this rock kind of stinks. You know, Brandon Moss could be better. But eventually, I do think Mo is going to pick up a bat, and it's going to be a big one, and it's going to be with that money. And it has nothing to do with Jason Hayward staying a Cardinal. It has nothing to do with signing their pitchers. I just think that that's kind of what I'm smelling, but I don't want to write about, because, you know, it's one of those things that doesn't really exist yet as far as the Cardinals going out for that big bat. But this kind of money, the first thing I thought about with this contract with Fox Sports Midwest was the Cardinals could eventually get a big bat.
Yeah, it's very possible, and that's something that they'll probably be looking in the free agent market. But, you know, this team, you know, as we talk here, it's still the best team in baseball.
Oh, yeah.
It's a team that doesn't – Yeah, they still need that first base bat. And we'll see what Moss brings. I mean, it looked like he should have had a double his first time up this time.
Yes, yes. Great play by that unreal third baseman.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, it would have been a double in the box score. It was pretty much a fluke fly ball hit that just went far enough, but Arenado ran it down, and that's what Arenado does. We'll see how that works out. We'll see how this works out. And, you know, I'm hopeful that the change of scenery, I'm hopeful that maybe a little jolt of a pennant race, maybe things will happen. Yeah, we'll have to wait and see.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, but yeah, I think you're right. I think that eventually, you know, I think they thought they were getting it with Hayward, and I still think they're going to try to re-sign him in this month.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But I think they're still searching. They'd like to have, I mean, not to the extent, obviously, but, you know, what they had with McGuire.
What
they've had with Pujols, you know, that MV3. I mean, if you could get a guy, of course, you know, again, it's a different offensive environment than it was even just 5 years ago. So it is harder to do. But if you can get a guy that can at least, even nowadays, hit consistently 20 home runs, I think that would be huge for this team.
Yeah, and I think that's why everybody gets really crazy excited about Randall Grichuk, is because he shows flashes of a guy that can hit 30 home runs, that can hit for power, and, you know, except for tonight, and I swear he's a good outfielder, except for tonight, where he played like basically the way I play the outfield in softball. Horrible first breaks. Mm-hmm. But that's basically me on a softball field, folks. That's why I graduated to first base. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I think that's why people get so excited about Grichuk, is because, oh man, he's showing flashes of when Pujols first came up, and Pujols was a freak of nature. But, you know, just the way that Grichuk is hitting everything hard, the way that the Cardinals haven't seen that much. They haven't seen a homegrown talent really just destroy balls. I mean, Alan Craig was a run producer. Matt Carpenter has been, you know, just, you know, a versatile Carpenter-like guy on a baseball field. Matt Adams showed a little bit of that in his first season. But I think that the Cardinals, you know, when you think about a guy like Nolan Arenado, I mean, just that kind of guy. That's what the Cardinals fans are kind of waiting for, a guy that's a phenom, a guy that they can have the Colorado front office go, yeah, we can go and trade Tulo finally because we have this guy at third base who's unbelievable. You know, a Mike Trout. I mean, people will compare Randall Grichuk to Mike Trout because they're drafted right next to each other. And I think people want, you know, Grichuk to be Mike Trout, which is just not going to happen. Mike Trout's an amazing player. But I think that just tells you how much the Cardinal fans want that unreal player. I mean, yeah, we got great talent in Molina, who's going to win, you know, 10 gold gloves by the time he finishes. Adam Wainwright's going to anchor this rotation. You have a lot of these great players, but you don't have that freak of nature talent like Miguel Cabrera or Giancarlo Stanton or Trout or Arenado, who's just kind of turning it into that kind of player in his first year. I think that's the reason people do call for trades. And that's also why I love a good trade. It just creates drama and it's action. You know, it's a new face in the lineup. So every July 29th, 30th, and 31st, I get a little excited. I mean, is he going to make a big splash, like a holiday-like splash? But I just think that the Cardinal fans are just kind of waiting for that next freaking nature offensive talent.
And those don't come along. I mean, that just
– Oh, they don't, no.
I think that's – we were really spoiled – You know, you went from McGuire to Pujols, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And you to two extensively oversized talents. We've had Ozzie Smith, who was a different type of talent. I mean, obviously. But so far, I mean, the shift has been so much in the last 5 years or so, is that the dominant talents are on the mound with Wainwright, with Carpenter, with, you know, now Walker and Martinez.
Deadly.
And there's a lot of good stuff by watching great pitchers. I mean, we enjoy that a lot. But yeah, there comes a time where you want that guy that makes you want to sit there and watch his at bat.
Drop everything.
Yeah.
And almost in a way, at times, Grichuk is that guy. Yeah. I mean, I almost kind of want to sit down and go, okay, he's going to strike out horribly, or he's going to hit it a long way.
Yeah, I mean, he's the, you know, I think we talked about it last week where we talked about him being the most exciting player on this team, and I think that's true, because you don't know exactly what you're going to get out of him. But when he does something, it has power,
it's electric, you know.
Yeah, it's electric, and so, yeah, and I just don't know how long that's going to last. And so you'd like to have somebody. And that's where we really feel, on a baseball side of things, obviously, really feel the loss of Tavares, because Tavares could have easily, maybe not this year, but he could have grown into that role, I think.
He was. Soon. And, he's,
you know, that's, he's just one of those guys. Just amazing to be missed.
It's just, yeah, I mean, just when he... I mean, when he connected, it was just by one of the most beautiful swings I've seen a Cardinal take. I mean, everybody remembers how Pujols just destroyed a ball, but with Tavares, it just seemed so natural, and he was so young, and, you know, we heard about the guy, and you know, and his poor ankle for, like, you know, 2 years. Is he going to be here? Is he going to get, you know, unleashed, you know? And Mike Matheny kind of, you know, he didn't play him, he played Alan Craig or this or that. You know, last summer was kind of a crazy thing in right field with Alan Craig's demise, and Grichuk came up and he was kind of flat at first, and then both him and Tavares kind of had a good August and September. And, you know, when you mentioned Tavares, you do get sad, because this guy was supposed to be a cornerstone player. If he's here, I mean, the Hayward trade doesn't happen. Shelley Miller's still here. I mean, everything is so different. And I think that Mozeliak is still kind of recovering from that. I mean, I say that, and it might seem a little bit far-fetched, but I still think that Mozeliak is just sitting in his office at times and going, man, that kid should be playing out there in right field. I mean, he'd be playing every day. You know, you'd have an outfield, you know, of Holiday, Grichuk, and Tavares. I mean, it'd be unreal. Or maybe right now you'd have an outfield of Piscotty, Grichuk, and Tavares. I mean, your whole Memphis fleet out in the outfield. And I think that our general manager is still kind of suffering from that loss, how he had to kind of reroute. He had to trade Shelley Miller and Tyro Jenkins to Atlanta. He had to make this, you know, this trade for Moss. He's trying to find that pop that was supposed to be homegrown in Tavares. I mean, Mo thought he had an Arenado out there in right field in Tavares. He thought he had a guy that was going to eventually hit, you know, third or fourth. And maybe not be the Pujols. I mean, Pujols is not going to make it easy for any Cardinal phenom because of what he did over 11 years. It was a freaking nature. I mean, just imagine if Bai Bonilla hadn't gotten hurt. That one, you know, and maybe La Russa doesn't put Pujols on the roster, even though McGuire basically was about ready to add Pujols himself, you know, write him in. It's just, it's crazy what these guys are going to deal with. And I think that Oscar suffered from that a little bit. He suffered from the Pujols effect, and he was compared by Mo to Pujols, and, oh man, this guy's gonna be the next Pujols. I was just wanting the guy to be the next great thing, and you saw shades of that. You saw, you know, the discipline and, you know, the ethics and the endurance of the game and how he had to learn it. But man, he was what Grichuk is this year. He was exciting. He was flawed. I mean, he can get fooled by a pitch. He might make a base running error. He kind of ran goofy in the outfield. You know, he just kind of looked like a big monster out there when he ran. You know, he wasn't fast. He wasn't slow. He was just kind of somewhere in between. But that was the flare of excitement you got watching him. And I still think that Mo's kind of still recovering from that. I mean, I know it was back in October, but man, it still seems so fresh even when you mentioned his name.
Yeah, it is. And it's the what might have been, and we'll unfortunately never know. I'm trying to think of what else we need to talk about before we shift to tonight's game. But
I guess we can talk about a Carpenter that kind of woke up tonight a little bit.
Yeah. It was interesting. I turned on the game a little bit late and then saw, you know, Colton Wong hitting third, which was an interesting place, and I think it was time to move Colton out of the first spot. I think his on base percentage and his streakiness is not a good thing, but it's easy to say, oh, Matt Carpenter needs to be leading off, and this is proving it. You know, four hits, two home runs, scores four runs. I mean, this is just like, hey, well, this is where he should be. Excuse me, it's one game.
And, oh yeah,
we've seen some good games out of him before. That being said, just watching him tonight, he looked more comfortable, and it's amazing if this is the case, if we're going to start to see a real Matt Carpenter now that he's shifted back to the top of the lineup, just how much impact that mental state of just even one place in the lineup can make.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and you look at what his stats did. I mean, with that night tonight, he ties Peralta for the team leading RBIs. I mean, just one good night. And last night, you know, he had a good night last night. He walked two times. He had a double. He was hitting it in the two spot. You know, and the one good thing is when he's going really well, he doesn't strike out. The last couple nights, couple walks, you know, he's hitting comfortable all of a sudden with two strikes. And when he was bad, it's when he got to two strikes, he was swinging at a bunch of just crap. Mm-hmm. I mean, he would just kind of go out of the zone. And that's the one thing that Matt Carpenter has been throughout his struggles. He still has 54 walks. I mean, he's drawn 14 walks in July. Even when he's been striking out and not getting hits, he still has a decent eye. But all of a sudden, it's like you mentioned, he's comfortable. He's confident. You see him when he gets two strikes. It's almost like to him, he has no strikes. He's confident that he can foul it off or hit it out of the stadium. I mean, hit it, you know, over the wall like tonight. It was a very convincing couple of home runs. It wasn't like he was swinging with a rolled up newspaper. I mean, he was hitting it for power. And this is the kind of thing that, I mean, I wrote a column today that I didn't even think got posted. I even mentioned, I said it could still be in my drafts that, you know, when you write for KSDK, you send them articles and, you know, I'm so used to posting my own stuff that when you give stuff to KSDK, you go, it's not up yet. It's not up yet. And then you don't check. And then all of a sudden it went up 7 hours ago. And so I wrote today about, you know, did the Cardinals, you know, mess him up by moving him out of that lineup out of the leadoff spot in late April? He was having such a good year, and Matheny did. It kind of sparked the rest of the team. And I kind of wrote about, did that mess up his mental game? Because we know how dedicated Carpenter is and how driven he is to stay in shape and you know, get to the ballpark and do, you know, 1,000 laps. I don't know what he does, but – you know, did they really kind of mess him up? As we all know, it wasn't physical. Matt Carpenter insisted that he wasn't hurt. But, you know, all of a sudden you move him back into that spot, and it's probably just a coincidence, but all of a sudden he looks comfortable. He's hitting balls for power. He's, you know, he's getting into deep counts. I just think that maybe the Cardinals kind of nudged him a little bit mentally, you know, when they moved him to the two-hole. And he was still productive, and he still drew walks, but that's when he just had that big drop. And maybe it happens still. Maybe it's connected to that dehydration and exhaustion. But I just keep thinking that maybe they kind of messed him up a little bit mentally and going, here, we're going to fix the rest of the team. We're going to move you out of a spot that you have dominated in for the last two seasons. And I just think even after the game tonight, I mean, Jim Hayes asked him, and he said, yeah, I like hitting leadoff. I mean, he said he'll hit anywhere Mike Matheny tells him to. But then at the end, you know, he did add that, you know, I like hitting leadoff. I mean, I think that these baseball players who are so prone to routine and where they're going to be, I mean, it's not, you know, logical to think, okay, he's going to hit so differently one spot up in the order or four spots down. But, you know, baseball players are kind of nutty when it comes to routine and their mental aspect and how they prepare for a game. And I really hope it continues. It may not, but if we get the Matt Carpenter that we saw tonight, even without the power, I mean, just a confident Matt Carpenter, he is going to ignite this offense more than any trade guy could possibly do.
That's true. I mean, if we basically traded for the old Matt Carpenter, then yeah, that's huge. And that, you know, that does relieve some burdens and give some opportunities to other people on the team. Yeah, it's still difficult to say. It's, you know, I know years ago there were all the statistical people were saying, you know, the bullpen doesn't matter. You should just use your best relievers. You know, in the ninth inning doesn't matter. Eighth inning doesn't matter. Just use your best relievers. And there's some truth to that. But, you know, then the Red Sox tried it, I think, in 2008, 2009, one of those years, and just, you know, tried it for about a couple months, and it just didn't work real well for them. And I think there is that idea that, you know, statistically, logically, all that, yeah, it doesn't matter, but mentally and psychologically, it can play an impact where a pitcher pitches, where a guy hits. We don't understand it because we've never done it. I mean, we've never.
It's just been that. It's kind of that routine, you know. I mean, you get to the field, you don't got to check the boxes or the lineup to see where you're hitting. You know, you're hitting first. I mean, that's just one of those things. And you know, the stats could support it, or they may not support it. But I just think that maybe he. You know, I mean, he's never going to say it. It's not Matt Carpenter. He's a very proud guy. He's a team player. You know, he isn't a guy like, you know, who's very flamboyant or outgoing or, I mean, he can get emotional, as you saw tonight. It's the first big smile I've seen on Matt Carpenter's face since like June, as far as just being really, just insanely happy about doing something for his team. But I do think that maybe quietly he was kind of struggling with kind of moving around the lineup or not being that leadoff spot anymore. But whatever it is, I just hope it continues.
Yeah, it would be really nice if we saw a lot more of that. But we will have to wait and see. Now, it also could have been the fact that they were facing their Rockies pitching staff.
Yes.
Which does not hurt people at all. I mean, you look at the fact that they had 14 hits tonight. My entire trip to St. Louis, I think they had a combined 6 hits.
I feel so bad for you. I mean, I thought, man, the two games, you drive all that way, and the two games that you go to, they can't score one run off a Reds pitching staff.
No. And, you know, I got to say, it's my fault. I have taken my wife to 5 or 6 different Cardinal games. We've seen the Indians once, we've seen the Reds twice, saw the Cubs once, and I guess it was, I don't remember, Pittsburgh was 2 years ago at the Blogger event. I'm not sure exactly which one it was.
I think we saw the, maybe did we Philly. See the Red? You know, we saw the Reds.
Was it the Reds that year at that time?
Year?
No, last year.
Last year was the Phillies.
Yeah, it was the Phillies. This year was, because I missed it, but I remember that. But yeah, it was.
Oh, yeah, you did miss it.
Anyway, she has gone to all those games, and the only game the Cardinals won was last year, that last year's Blogger event. And I understand that's because Ben Chambers was there, and Ben Chambers has said he has never seen them lose in person. So apparently his curse overruled hers. But he wasn't there this time, and it was just ugly. She didn't even go to the second game. It was just the fact she was in St. Louis, I think, that apparently affected it. That was it was an ugly series, and obviously I think that would have forced Mo's hand even if Holiday hadn't gotten hurt, because they had one swing of the bat in that whole 3-game series of pretty many runs.
Yeah,
and, you know, Colton Wong hits a grand slam, and so they win 4-0 in the first game. But that is it. Now, granted, the Reds didn't do anything either. I mean, biggest, you know, second game they scored 3 of their 4 runs on one swing of the bat, and that's the last game, just one home run, 1-0 game. So it wasn't like the pitching staff was at fault, as we know for the most part, and it was very surprising to see Carlos Martinez struggle tonight. But you know, when you can find a Reds team that has lost its starter, that is fairly should be fairly demoralized, a team that wasn't sure that they were going to be the same when they left as they were when they came in, you know, surprising that, you know, Jay Bruce and Chapman, you know, guys that are on the block, and they come in and shut you down like that. And granted, Mike Leake has had some success in the past against the Cardinals, so I give you some of that. But I think that should have woken Mo up anyway. And, you know, a Holiday going down was just the nail in the coffin, if you will. So it was good to see some offense tonight. I mean, it was good to see them. I mean, we haven't seen a big game. I'd have to look it up and see when the last time they scored 6 runs was. But it was kind of a wild game, and a game that sometimes you can see this sparking a little bit and getting on a run.
Yeah, they scored 12 off the Mets on Saturday. So, but then again, before that, I think it was 8. Against the White Sox. But yeah, I mean, it just seems that when this team doesn't score runs, it's like it's been weeks since they scored a lot of runs. And, you know, the one thing about tonight that was shocking was that, you know, when the Cardinals actually hit, you know, the pitching kind of, you know, ran into some trouble. And it was a lot of related to, you know, to the defense, you know, and Carlos Martinez kind of almost lost his cool tonight. I mean, we had a little bit of drama there in the early going with him plunking the Mayo, I think it was, and just kind of getting all the benches almost, I mean, that are about ready to clear for a classic baseball shoving contest. Unless Johnny Cueto's in the field, we all know what happens then. But, you know, I mean, it was one of those, it was, as the Tim McCarver said about 95 times, it was a really just bizarre game. And it was one of those dirty wins. It's kind of like when you see in a football game where, you know, it's kind of like a low-scoring affair, and it's kind of sloppy. You know, tonight the Cardinals kind of escaped, and they kind of won one. And it was good to see the bats finally rescue the pitching staff. I think it was the first time they gave up more than 4 runs since July 12th. Hmm. I mean, the pitching staff has just been, you know, insane and great in the eyes of this this very streaky hitting that the team has done. But I think that's the one thing I kind of like seeing tonight. You see, you know, Carlos Villanueva pick up the win. You see them come back when, you know, I mean, look, I mean, if you have an 8-6 lead, given to Chapman last night, it's just not going to happen. But then you see John Axford kind of have some trouble. And like you said earlier, I think the Rockies are just the team the Cardinals need to face in order to get back on their horse and really right the ship that they were kind of really cruising on before those two shutouts. I mean, yeah, you know, you drop the Sunday game against Atlanta where I think you scored one of 30 innings, as Jennifer LaGauche pointed out last night after the 1-0 loss. You know, to see the card score 9 runs tonight, it really makes you feel good, but it also makes you think, I mean, that was the, you know, I mean, when are we going to see them score that much again?
Yeah, and it could be a while, although, you know, again, there's lots of good chances this weekend, there should be.
Yeah, and you're actually right. As far as the last time, it was the White Sox 8-5. We beat them on the 21st, but before that, really a big romp. Yeah, it was 12 days ago against the Mets.
Yeah, and was that the game that we were at the ballpark and they got wild? There was that one.
That was when Lackey beat up we beat up on Cologne that day, 12-2. That was pretty much a romp, and then we lost the bizarre 18-inning game the day later.
Yeah. I mean, you look at it, and you look at it, you look at the schedule. You got the Rockies this weekend. You go into Cincinnati again. That, you know, who knows if Jay Bruce is there? You don't know if Chapman is there. Then you go into Milwaukee. Milwaukee's given up a lot of their players. You don't have Carlos Gomez any there anymore. Will Adam Lind be there at that time? You know, you've got a number of these teams. You know, the Marlins are coming up. The Padres are coming up. You do have a few hits and bumps. You got the Nationals and such. But for the most part, these are situations where the bats should be able to get on a roll because they shouldn't be facing teams that are just dominant.
Yeah.
But there's lots of shoulds this year that have not come true, so you can't say that it's going to happen that way.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, right now, we have three more against Colorado, like you said. We have the next 9 games against teams that are really not that good. I mean, yes, the Reds just kind of shut us down. And, you know, and we're actually going to face a pitcher that we lost to last night. We're going to face him in the first game in Milwaukee on Tuesday. And, you know, the Cardinals have to take care of these games. Then you face Pittsburgh on the 11th at Busch, and then you get the Giants on the 17th. And, you know, and you're going to San Francisco at the end of the month. And like you said, you have the Nationals. You have a strip of games. As far as the toughest stretch, it's probably going to be August 28th. When you go to San Francisco, and then you play 3 against them, you play 3 at home against the Nationals, then you play 3 at home against the Pirates and the Cubs are after them. So you have a pretty big stretch there where you got some tough games. So in between, you really just got to take care of business. I mean, you can't lose against these teams. I mean, yes, we can all get – I mean, nobody should be crawling to the ledge, you know, after last night's loss, even how bad it looked with the record the Cardinals had. But, you know, when you're facing these low teams, you have to take care of business. You know, you got to assert some kind of a swagger out there. I mean, and build up another winning streak to when you go into a series like Pittsburgh, you kind of have the advantage. And, you know, so, I mean, for as far as a big series, that's the one I kind of look at next, because the Cardinals have a 5.5 game lead now after they win tonight and the Pirates lose. And, you know, by the time you get to the 11th against Pittsburgh at home, you might be able to kind of be able to push them down a lot. Or it could be really close, or it could be what it is right now, and you have a chance to push them back to where they were, you know, before the All-Star break, that road trip that the Cardinals embarked on that kind of changed everything. But I do think that, you know, the schedule is soft. I mean, you're facing teams that are just wanting to kind of derail you. I mean, the Reds couldn't have felt better about coming into Busch Stadium and taking 2 out of 3, especially after that long grand slam kind of demoralized them. As far as this series, you know, you just want to keep winning series. You want to take 3 out of 4 against the Rockies at the very least. You want to win the Cincy series. You want to dominate the division like you have done for the most part over this whole season. You just got to win these games against the low teams, and then you got to battle the tough ones. Because, well, it is kind of a soft schedule. There is a couple of strips in here where it can get a little ugly.
Well, yeah, I mean, anytime you go out to the West Coast, you run some risks. You've got the Giants for 6 in this match. You go play the Nationals at the end of the month. You know, obviously, you got that 3 with the Pirates that are coming up in a couple of weeks. Yeah, there's definitely some spots that are going to keep them tuned up, if you will, for the playoffs. But they've got to take care of business, and it's a good thing to be at. I mean, they're at, like you say, 5.5 up on the Pirates, or like 10.5 up on the Cubs. The rest of the division has packed it in for the year, for the most part. So it's good to see. I mean, it's obviously the best position you want to be in. They're 65 wins. They're 4 games, I think, up on Kansas City for the best record. Lots of positive things, but it's still that struggle. And I mean, I guess the good thing is that a lot of times offenses struggle in the postseason anyway. So if you've got good pitching, you could shut people down. And the Cardinals are used to winning close and low scoring games. That helps too. I mean, I guess you can rationalize it however you want, but I think I just like to see them score some more runs and not worry about it as much. I guess one other thing we should talk about along with all the roster moves was the fact that Dan Johnson was put on waivers. I don't think that's any, you know, huge thing. I mean, it's not surprising at all, given that they've acquired another first baseman. Johnson just didn't, I mean, never, I don't think we expected him to do much when he came up, and didn't really get a chance to do much, but I guess he at least got the experience of being a Cardinal, huh?
Yeah, I mean, and like you said, I mean, this guy hasn't really had a great season in over 5-6 years. So really, when he came up, he was only going to be kind of like a Band-Aid, you know, a guy that you could put there until you figured out who should play first base. You kind of did it so you can give Piscotty a little bit of time to get ready. You know, he had those first two RBIs on that road trip in Wrigley, which were great. But, you know, you never saw a guy that was going to do any damage up here. He was just basically kind of a roster space to kind of, you know, maybe get a proven veteran to go up there, take some smart at-bats. You know, he was able to touch up lefties a little bit in his career. We never really got a chance to see him make a big dent. I mean, we all know that Greg Garcia and Xavier Scruggs came up and they each had, like, you know, 7 and 8 hits apiece, and they made a big dent. You know, Dan Johnson has never had that chance. I mean, he's pretty much the kind of guy who's probably near the end of his rope. I mean, he's still able to hit AAA pitching pretty well. He'll come up here, and he might give you a scratch-based hit, but as far as really, I mean, as far as losing him possibly, I mean, you're not going to get all set about losing Dan Johnson off your roster if he does get claimed. And I don't think he is as far as – I mean, he hasn't been picked up yet, has he? I mean –
Not that I've seen, and yeah, like you're right. I don't see that he's a guy that too many contenders are going to want to take a shot on, and if they're not contending, you know, there's really not much point in taking on a guy like that. So
yeah,
he will make clear and go play in Memphis.
Yeah, this guy's kind of. I mean, he isn't going to be the person people think of. Well, okay, I can't get Am Lin, but I'll go claim Dan Johnson on waivers. I mean, and that's no shot at Dan Johnson. I mean, you know, I mean, you have a guy who's, I think, you know, 35 years old, or he's pretty darn close to it. And you have a guy who's just kind of nearing the end of his rope. I mean, a guy who's at the end of his career. He had a couple, you know, decent seasons with, I think, the Rays back in the day. And he, you know, he's still a smart baseball player. I mean, he's always going to give you something. But as far as, you know, needing to play Piscotty there at times, you're going to put Mark Reynolds there. Brandon Moss is going to get time there. Brandon Moss is going to ensure that, in my opinion, that Mark Reynolds doesn't overplay, and that you're going to see Piscotty play a lot of left field. And I mean, if I had to write a lineup card, the lineup card is going to read Piscotty in left, and Brandon Moss at first base, with Mark Reynolds getting some time against right-handers, which Moss doesn't hit too well. But, you know, Dan Johnson, I mean, it isn't like you're just going to completely forget what he did here. He gave the Cardinals a piece, kind of some Major League Baseball experience, kind of when they needed it, because they had a bunch of kids on this roster with the injuries especially. So, and you never know what these guys are doing inside a dugout as far as helping out these young kids adjust to the majors, give them advice. But as far as really missing his bat or his glove, that's just not going to be a thing that at least I'm going to think about.
Yeah. We did have one question on Twitter. Somebody asking about what we thought about getting a guy like Will Middlebrooks, well, actually, Will Middlebrooks in particular, for the bench. And, I mean, you look at his stats. I mean, I don't guess you look at the stats too much, because if so, we're probably more critical on Brandon Moss, even more critical than we were. But he struggled with his bat every year except his rookie year. He does have pop. I mean, he hit 9 home runs already in San Diego this year, and just kind of not really – kind of part-time work. You know, I don't guess it's a terrible thing, but I don't know that it's, you know, I'm not sure where that fits. I mean, obviously people would say, okay, you get rid of, you'd like to get rid of Cosma, but Middlebrooks isn't going to play short. He's a third baseman by trade. It would allow Carpenter to move over to second at times for Wong, but you still don't have anybody to play short behind Peralta. And so, you know, you can't, if you're not going to be able to waive Wong, I mean, waive Cosma, obviously you're not waiving Wong. If you're not able to waive Cosma, I don't see how he gets on this team. I think maybe in the abstract it's not a bad guy for a bench, but I just don't see that that's going to work for this team.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at his month by month, I mean, he had decent months in April and May, and then he just kind of dropped off in June, and now he's in AAA. It's just one of those things where, you know, if you think of Will Middlebrooks, you immediately think of the 2013 World Series with Alan Craig at third base. It's just one of those things where you think of a guy, yeah, I mean, he can't hurt the Cardinals as far as the bench, but he does have 9 home runs, and he has numbers that are really equivalent almost to what Mark Reynolds has as far as home runs, RBIs, average. He strikes out a lot. He's got 60 strikeouts and, 255 at-bats. So, I mean, he's not a guy that you get excited about as far as a low-hanging fruit. I think that's kind of what Will Middlebrooks kind of qualifies as, a guy that maybe you go out and get. But I just don't see where he's going to play now that you have Brandon Moss. You have Mark Reynolds can play third base. You know, Carpenter's a guy that unless he is hurt, he's going to play third base almost every day. And, you know, I don't see much room for him on this roster except for maybe a pinch hit bat. So maybe if Mo wants to go out and get that guy that's kind of, you know, hey, I mean, obviously the guy's won a World Series. He's played in, and you know, he's played in the playoffs. He's been there. He's a guy that's got experience. He doesn't like getting tripped anyway. No, I had to. But it's one of those guys where you don't immediately get excited about. But, yeah, sure, Mo can go out and grab him. And if it's going to cost him nothing and give him a chance to – maybe contribute a couple of big hits. Like you said, he did. He does have a little bit of pop. I mean, if we're going to compare what Mark Reynolds has done as a disappointment, I mean, Will Middlebrooks basically almost did that for the Padres this year. And of course, getting anybody out of Petco Field is always a good thing to do as far as just getting. And like you said about Moss, you bring Will Middlebrooks over to this team where they're winning and it's positive and they're your best team in baseball. And all you want to do is contribute any way possible. I'm sure Will Middlebrooks would love to come here. I mean, right now he's on a AAA team for the Padres. I mean, you know, I mean, if you'd say, hey, you want to come play for the Cardinals and not ride a smelly bus, you know, every night, yeah, I'm sure he'd say yes. But as far as it being on Mo's radar, I don't see it right now. I can still see Mo making another move, but it's going to be like in August for not a Middlebrooks type player. But I can see Mo kind of picking a little apple off a tree and seeing if he can fit in this roster.
Yeah, the only, you know, earlier on I said, yeah, I don't think Mo's going to make any more moves, and he's probably not. But we got to remember that last July 30th, he went out and got Justin Masterson, and we thought, okay, he's filled the hole that the Cardinals have.
Yeah.
And then the next day he trades, you know, Alan Craig and Joe Kelly for John Lackey, which has turned out pretty well, by the way. You know, in case
yes,
you
it
start
has.
Thinking that Mo has started and to lose a little bit on his fastball, that one's worked out pretty well.
And it just said that Mike Leake of the Reds went to the Giants.
Oh, really? Couldn't have done that 2 days ago, could you?
Yeah. John Heyman just reported that at 11:20 that, yeah, Mike Leake's going to the Giants. So now the Giants has got another arm that the Cardinals just hate.
Yeah. And we're going to have to face the Giants 6 times in in August, so we'll have to probably see.
I mean, I guess we should be happy that David Price didn't go to the Dodgers, that he went to the Blue Jays. So when they're projecting him going to the Dodgers, I was like, that's just not fair. I mean, you're going to have to go through the Nationals or the Dodgers with that pitching. But so I'm glad he went to the Blue Jays. But now Mike Leake, who just made us look like, you know, little leaguers the other night, you know, now he's going to the Giants.
Yeah, I gotta say, it's gonna take me 3 months to figure out where everybody is. Again,
it's been a crazy week.
You know, I leave and then everybody decides to swap players.
Yeah.
And you know, again, what does that leave for tomorrow? I don't know. I don't think we'll see anything. I really don't think we'll see anything out of Mo.
I mean, is but, it? Is the deadline now? It's tomorrow at midnight, right? I mean, it goes the whole day.
No, it's at
3 p.m.?
I think it's 3 St. Louis time.
Okay, so 3 p.m. I mean, yeah, I'm kind of with you. I don't see, now that Holiday's prognosis is not as bad, I'm not even sure that weighs in. I just don't see what else he could do. I mean, you know, I mean, you're not going to see him go out and send another two players to get a guy like, you know, Cespedes or Davis or Lind. I just can't see him doing it after what he gave up to get Moss. I mean, because if you get another guy, then where's Moss going to play? And, you know, where's Piscotty going to play? I just think I'm with you. I can't see an impact. And that's what most of the day, he, you know, as far as an impact trade, I just don't see it.
Yeah, again, I don't expect to. But if you want to just put it out there theoretically, you move Moss to the bin. You get, if you go get a guy that is going to be a free agent at the end of the year, what I think Justin Upton, I think he's in a free agent at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, him and Cespedes are both rentals, yes.
So you go get Upton, and you put him in left until Holiday comes back, and then you worry about it then. But put him in left and move Piscotty to back to first, and then you let Moss be that guy that's sitting off the end of the bench, because you still got Moss for next year. So it's not like you're completely wasting it. And obviously he gives you more punch, he gives you more power off the bench. Now, you know, and then what is that? I mean, the problem is to get somebody like Upton, you'd probably have to give up a Krejcik and a...
Probably a Marco Gonzalez or a Cooney. Probably one of those guys. And, you know, and yesterday, hey, I mean, if he makes this deal today, I'm sure people would be all over it. Yeah, Justin Upton, 18 home runs, 56 RBIs, he's got a big bat. Yeah, but now it's almost like you think, is this going to be the year like we're saying where he makes that initial bat move, and then he makes that big bat move. I don't see it, but man, when it comes to Mo, I just can't predict this guy anymore.
I tell you, if it was Krejcik, boy, I don't know.
Yeah,
if it was for anybody that was for a length of time, maybe.
Yeah, he's 27. I mean, Justin Upton's only 27 years old, and he's, like I said, he's got that bat. I mean, you know, he's got the pop, and he's doing this. Let me look at his splits. I mean, he's doing this. I mean, he's hit 13 home runs at Petco Park this year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just insane. I mean, he's got better numbers. Here's the crazy part. He's got better numbers at home than on the road. So he likes it to be, you know, hitting in a parking lot. It's one of those things where, I mean, this kind of guy, I think, is what Cardinal fans want.
See, I mean, you know, if you could get him, the problem is, I mean, I'm just saying, if you could get him for Krejcik and Cooney. If you're getting for Krejcik and Cooney,
you pull that trigger probably. Yeah, I mean,
then you have Borges is in there, and you've got Upton and Hayward, but then you've given up Krejcik because I don't think Cooney's a big deal. I mean, we've talked
about really.
I
mean, he's basically kind of like not any more than Kaminsky. He's probably like a third, fourth, fifth starter at best.
I mean, he's a guy that he can help some players, he could help a team, he can't help this team as much. But do you want to give up 3 years of Krejcik for 2 months of Upton?
I guess.
You're probably not going to sign Upton and Hayward, especially because you got Holiday coming back next year. So you gotta pick one of those two guys to try to sign again.
Yeah. Unless you have Hayward go to center field, and I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, and you know, you can't really move Upton over to right. I mean, as far as money, I think they could do it, but as far as where is he going to play, I guess if you do trade Krejcik, you're telling yourself, okay, we have to sign Hayward. And you also have Piscotty, who's kind of lingering out there too. But yeah, I mean, Upton's a guy that, you know, he's got a young age. He's got the kind of things that you want. He's kind of like the shinier side of the coin. I mean, look, for people that are getting all mad and upset, he's got three more home runs and six more RBIs than Brandon Moss.
Yeah.
But he's also a guy who projects to do better things. He's kind of got, you know, a little bit more of a bat, more of consistency as far as slugging on base percentage. He steals bases too. He's got 17 steals this year. He's a guy that if Mo wanted to really pull the hat out, and like you said, you move Moss, you have Moss and Reynolds on the bench as far as just your big bats, and you have Piscotty at first base. I guess you do that, and you swap out the other two guys, but that would be a big surprising move. I mean, last night before this move, before the Indians thing kind of started heating up, I was thinking about Cespedes. I mean, again, like Justin Upton, this guy would be a rental. And you know, the Tigers can't even give him a qualifying offer after the season he has in his contract where you can't do that. So it would probably be a pure rental, and you know, you're not sure that you really want to do that. But then again, maybe Mo is in that mood where I thought he was in a mood where maybe he might push for a let's go all in this year with this one guy at least. So, you know, while we all want an Upton or Cespedes, I do think that Moss is going to be it, but you never know.
Yeah, I think. I mean, if I'm right, the rules are now that if you traded for a guy, you can't offer him. You can't offer anyway. I mean, if we got Upton, we couldn't offer a qualifying offer and get a pick. I don't think that works that way anymore. I mean, and Upton's going to get more than I think you want to pay. So
probably, yeah.
You know, do you give up a Grichuk for that? I guess it just depends on if you think Grichuk is actually going to develop into something, or if we're seeing peak Grichuk.
Yeah, and peak. That's, yeah.
You know, I think the organization seems to be high on him, so I don't see that they would do that. But, you know, I would be – I'm not completely sold on Grichuk for whatever reason. I would be tempted to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it would. I wasn't sold at first on Grichuk. I like what he's done this year. But when you have a chance to get a guy like Upton, it's just one of those things where you go, man, this guy – is just another big bat that would just change this lineup. I mean, when I think about Cespedes, that's what got me, is that, you know, you I mean, with Cespedes, you got a big bat, you have twin pistols in left field and right field, the guys who can throw people out at the plate. So, I mean, Upton does give you that flair, and maybe Mo did kind of. I mean, we're never going to know who Mo talked to. I mean, he may have talked to Detroit, he may have talked to the Padres about Upton and say, hey, what's the price? And it may have been outrageous. I mean, even if he is a rental, it doesn't mean the team can't ask a lot, because they know the need the Cardinals have. And maybe that kind of worked against Mo, you know, and the market really kind of started to speed up with the Tulo deal and all the other deals that started going down. Mo is always kind of a guy that kind of gets to the table a little bit late. He likes to kind of browse the buffet a little bit and see what's out there. So while an Upton deal, I'd be almost pushed to go to be agree with you and say, let's do that trade. I mean, the components of the deal would really be Grichuk and Upton, not really Cooney. Cooney would be kind of like, here's a pitcher that they may be able to be a number three in that ballpark. But, I mean, it's one of those things you do think about that. And this is what you do when you got less than a half a day before the deadline. You start dreaming of all these scenarios where you want him to do it. And, yes, he could say that, he could tell the media all day that he's got nothing else going, but he might have something going. He could be still talking. And it's been reported by a couple guys, and I know John Morosi said that the Cardinals could be checking in on Cespedes. I don't really believe that. But as far as I wouldn't rule it out, but I would say that before now, on 3 p.m. tomorrow, I can't see a really big impact move happening. But there are deals out there to be had, and the Cardinals do have the pieces.
Yeah, it's interesting looking at Upton's splits. He's actually doing very, very badly away from Petco Park. That does not make much sense. Hitting 211,
four
homers.
I mentioned that he's got he's got the 13 home runs. He's got the 558 slug in Petco Park.
Yeah.
I mean, 912 OPS, folks, at Petco Park.
It's interesting. Maybe it's a comfort thing. I don't know. Yeah, it seems... Yeah, I think it's just daydreaming now to think that he's going to do anything else. I think that if he's going to do that, if those kind of ideas were there, that he probably doesn't pull the Moss deal. He goes ahead and does one of those.
Yeah.
It does make it a little bit more difficult now. But
And you also look at Justin Upton, I mean, it isn't as this year, folks. I mean, this is the guy that was a 5.7 WAR player, wins above replacement in 2011. He had 100 RBIs last year. He strikes out a ton, but the Cardinals are used to that, so that's not a big deal. As far as just, I mean, like I said, he's got a great stolen base percentage this year, so he can steal, he can slug. He's already at a 3.1 wins above replacement this year. I mean, he's got the track record of what this team needs, and like you said, he's still young. So when you think about Justin Upton, he is one of those guys you go, okay, so did he contact the Padres? Did he ask them what the price was? You know, I always wonder, is, you know, if he could disclose to us after the deadline tomorrow, these are all the teams I called, and this is what I asked about. That would be great. That would be a great article, what Mozeliak did at 2 p.m. yesterday. I mean, did you inquire about Justin Upton? Did you inquire about Cespedes? What was the exact talks between you and the Brewers about Lind? I mean, those are the kind of things that leave me going, okay, so if Upton is this big, shiny rental who's still young and has popped, did Mo even inquire about him?
You got to figure they did. And you got to figure that maybe we're, you know, it's very possible we're completely selling this whole thing short. Maybe they wanted a whole lot more than Cooney and Grichuk.
Very likely.
It's very probably so. I don't do trade discussions on my site or in general because I'm terrible at it. You know, I'm terrible at evaluating. I never was real good about making trades in fantasy baseball either. So I get that. I don't know. It would be fun. It would be interesting to see him kind of pull something out like that and just really shake things up. Obviously, the money's going to be there coming up in the next few years. It almost feels like the team needs something big, that they're getting a little bit stagnant. I mean, obviously, if you're going to be stagnant as the best team in baseball. But
I mean, you can rely on, you know, on great pitching like they have, but you just feel like they could use just that like lightning rod bat. Mm. And I thought that was going to come either through Cleveland or through somebody else. I thought it was going to happen this year. I thought that with a Holiday injury, that kicked things in a hard drive. Even if it took more, I thought Mo would press a little more. And when Moss came over, I think the biggest thing was that the Cardinal fans were expecting so much more. And when they got Moss and his track record and what he kind of put, he kind of just projects to be a platoon. I think he just kind of let people down because they were thinking about Upton and Cespedes and Lind, and I think it was just more of a letdown.
Yeah, maybe so. I don't think we'll see anything, as we've continually said, but like to think we might. So, I guess that is probably all
we have. We can beat talk it up.
About. Yeah, I think we've beaten that horse to death. And then some. You got any movies for us this week, Dan?
Well, you know, everybody is going to have to go out and see. I have not. I'm going to go see Tom Cruise. Basically, try to hang off the side of an airplane as it takes off tomorrow on Mission Impossible 5. I'm a big Tom Cruise fan just for the simple reason that he puts himself in front of all these movies. He does all of his own stunts. And for some people, that's just kind of a thing. Well, I mean, a lot of action stars don't do their own stunts. And Tom Cruise is the guy that said, no, I'm going to strap myself to the side of a very big jet plane, and it's going to take off, and I'm basically going to be hanging off the side of it. And it's basically the latest Mission Impossible stunt, you know, a couple years ago, hanging off the side of the tallest building in the world. It's just one of those things where it makes it exciting to see somebody at this age still try to do the great things that action stars should do. And, you know, so if I had to recommend one movie to see without seeing it, I think Mission Impossible 5 is going to be great. It's Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. It's got Jeremy Renner. It's got Alec Baldwin, Simon Pegg, Ving Rhames. It's basically going to be your spy action thriller. But I'm also previewing at home a Lego Movie documentary. It's coming out this weekend. It's about a couple guys who really went into the history of Legos and how they've dominated the world for as far as kids and stuff for the last few decades. So I'm going to watch that at home, and I'm going to watch Tom Cruise on the big screen.
Yeah, that's seen a little bit about the Lego documentary. Pretty interesting to see.
Is that
coming out straight to Netflix as well? For some reason, I was thinking
that. I would assume that as far as it's going to come out to the big movie cities in L.A. and New York, but yes, it is going to be on iTunes and on demand, and it'll probably be, I can see that being a multi-dimensional release as far as where it's going to go. I know it's opening in St. Louis at a couple small theaters, so in most cities around the country, it could be at a small indie theater, but it will find its way to on demand and iTunes soon enough.
Okay, well, it'll be interesting to watch that. I think it'll be a pretty interesting thing. That was one of the reasons we had to make sure we hit the Lego store when we were in St. Louis.
That's the thing.
That's a big thing.
I mean, apparently in L.A., they've built like almost a whole theater out of Legos.
Oh, really?
Which is just crazy. I mean, you know, you could be walking in and one day eating in a restaurant made of Legos.
That would be
That'd be crazy.
That would be. And you've seen the, I don't know if you've probably somewhere along the way seen the big life-size X-Wing they made out of.
Yes.
Of Legos. That was
that's crazy.
Crazy as well.
That's so, dedication right there.
Yeah, pretty much. So, all right. Well, let's see. This we've talked long enough. I think we'll wrap it. We'll see what we are talking about next week. Hopefully we're talking about a lot more offense. Maybe we're talking about this other trade that we don't think is going to happen, but we keep hoping.
But we could, yeah. This phantom trade that may be coming together right now, because it was this time last night that all the Indian stuff started. So maybe we'll start hearing some sources about other sources and leaks and probabilities and, you know, Ken Rosenthal basically running on caffeine until 3 p.m. tomorrow. So
yeah.
It's going to be fun.
Should be. We'll look and see who gets going where. So, for Dan, I'm Daniel, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to The Best Dans in Baseball. We'd love to have your feedback on the show. Email us at bestdansinbaseball@gmail.com. Dan Buffa can be found on Twitter at Buffa82, Daniel Shoptaw at C70. The show's Twitter handle is bestdan. BASEBAL1. You can also find us on Facebook under Best Dans in Baseball.